The seminal case in this area is the Titan Transportation case. This is one our law firm tried about 3 years ago, and one for which the Supreme Court denied review. And Titan's really simple. They don't own anything. They're in the business of hauling rock from a quarry to a construction site. And they don't even have employees that do that. They hire independent haulers as subcontractors to undertake that work. And when that work is done, they give the subcontractors, the independent haulers, 80 to 90% of their take. And the comptroller's position was that that Titan had to pay tax on 100% of that money, and then the subs, or the independent haulers, had to pay tax on their 80 to 90% share. Titan disagreed. We went to court, and the court held that the payments to the independent drivers qualified for the exclusion, and did so because the purpose of that exclusion was to prevent double taxation in areas where the use of Forms 1099 type workers was prevalent. In doing so, the court expansively interpreted the revenue exclusion provision, extending it to anywhere there's a reasonable contact or reasonable nexus that a business has with a construction site. I mean, obviously, Titan's not there doing construction work. Most of their travel, obviously, is away from the site itself. They're not really causing a physical change to the site. They're just dumping rock there. In connection with that, they rejected the arguments that the comptroller had made, but we see those arguments now sort of resurfacing again in a new policy, which is now before the courts yet one more time. And so the comptroller says, despite Titan Transportation's holding that this revenue exclusion for real estate business-oriented companies is very limited in scope, and it's really not available to hardly anyone, and you only get it unless you have a three-party contract, which we know as lawyers, it could be dangerous to draft contracts that give rights to third parties, and typically are not done. But if you have a contract where the owner is contracting both with the general contractor and the subcontractors within the same document, that is the type of contract the comptroller says qualifies. So too are fee-sharing contracts. That is where you're going to give a percent of what you take to your subcontractor. And so the thrust of that is that persons in this business that want this exclusion don't get to exclude payments, say, made under lump sum contracts or time and material contracts or hourly contracts, anything but these two mentioned here. Now, about 2 years ago, our law firm tried a case for Gulf Copper that we'll be talking about. And in that case, Gulf Copper, the comptroller raised this issue, raised what we're talking about now, and the court rejected it. In the ensuing appeal to the third court, the third court of appeals also rejected this position from the comptroller. But it is now before the Texas Supreme Court. So we don't have final word on whether or not it's a valid policy or not. We know it's one that they're enforcing. We'll have to wait until the Supreme Court decides whether or not they're going to take the Gulf Copper case and how they decide that case. Okay, let's turn now to the cost of goods sold cases. Again, just some brief structure. To determine the cost of goods sold subtraction, you first have to ask, am I eligible? And if I am, what costs get put into that subtraction? You are eligible if you're an actual owner of goods, meaning you own inventory, you know, like a retail store. I own inventory, I buy inventory, or I produce inventory. That would be an actual owner of goods. Or you could be a deemed owner of goods. And in that regard, the cost of goods sold statute sort of pulls us back to what we just saw on the revenue exclusion, which says that if you are a taxable entity furnishing labor or materials to a project for the construction, improvement, and so forth of real estate that is above the ground or below the ground, then you would qualify to include your cost in the cost of goods sold subtraction. The Titan case alternatively would have qualified for the cost of goods sold subtraction had the court not said they get the revenue exclusion. They would have gotten one or the other. So qualifying under either of these provisions entitles you to include your eligible cost. And the statute says expressly that goods do not include intangible assets like trademarks, contract rights, things of that nature, nor do they include services, which makes sense, right? We're lawyers. We perform services. Would not make sense for us to get a cost of goods sold subtraction for the cost that we incur. And so then the statute gives us a couple of lists of eligible cost. One, I've just thrown under the category of direct cost, but we know from looking at this category that direct means is much more expansive than just the materials and labor that go into the product, because we have a non-exclusive list of examples of the types of costs that get put in, and materials and labor obviously get put in. They are a direct cost. But one step removed, we get depreciation of production equipment put in. Two steps removed, we get the cost of pollution control devices that service that production equipment that is used to manufacture the goods. And then another step removed, we get the repairs to the pollution equipment that services the production equipment that creates the goods. So when the statute says direct, I don't think it literally means that. I think it means according to our thinking, a cost that is connected with a particular product rather than something that directly touches or affects that particular product.